Translation and repetition. It is true.
It is true.
That by practicing restraint of the senses. By the yoga system. One can get relief. From the disturbances of desire and lust. This is not sufficient. To give satisfaction to the soul. For this satisfaction. Is derived.
And
devotional service. The personality of God. The fourth of Srila Prabhupada. Yoga aims at controlling the senses. My practice of the mystic process of bodily exercises, sitting, thinking, feeling, willing, concentrating, meditating, the rest being merged into transcendence. One can control the senses. The senses are considered like venomous serpents, and the yoga system exists to control them. On the other hand, Aramuni recommends another method for controlling the senses in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda, the personality of God. By his experience, he says that devotional service of the Lord is more effective and practical than the system of artificially controlling the senses. In the service of the Lord of Mukunda, the senses are transcendentally engaged. Thus, there is no chance of their being engaged in sense gratification. The senses want some engagement. To check them artificially is no check at all, because as soon as there is some opportunity for enjoyment, the serpent like senses will certainly take advantage of it. There are many such instances in history, just like the Swamishra Munis, falling victim to the beauty of Inaka, but Thakur Haridas was a little denied by the world as Maya. And still she could not induce that great devotee into entrance. The whole idea is that without devotional service of the Lord, neither the yoga system nor Brahma philosophical situation can ever become successful. Your devotional service of the Lord without being tinged with fluids of work, mystic yoga, or speculative philosophy is the foremost procedure to attain self-realization. Such pure devotional service is transcendental in nature, and the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such a process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with the subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental but is called mixed devotional service. Srila Vyasa Devi Dharma Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually develop all these different systems of transcendental realization in the text. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and so forth, the text 35, chapter 6, character 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the matter of conversation between Narada and Vyasa, translation again, it is true that by practicing restraint of the senses by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. But this satisfaction is derived from devotional service to the personality of God. So, Narada Muni is explaining how he travels throughout the transcendental world as well as in the three conditions of the material world. Because he is fixed on broken devotional service, he is constantly chanting or singing the transcendental message of the glories of the Lord, vibrating the instrument called Veena, which was given by Lord Krishna and was charged with transcendental sound. As soon as Narada begins to chant, then Lord Shri Krishna immediately fixes himself in the heart of Narada. So in this way, Narada personally is saying, it is personally experienced by me, that those who are always full of cares and anxiety due to desiring contact of the senses with the objects, in crossing the ocean of nations and the most suitable boat, the constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of God. This decades after hearing all these things, says, well, maybe that's true. Maybe one can get this benefit by chanting the glories of the Lord. However, our yoga system can also do something. How many yogis are there? Just in case anybody was thinking back on the Viva, he came back and he said, boy, it's true that by practicing the restraint of the yoga system, one may get some relief from the disturbances of desire. But it's not sufficient to give full satisfaction. Therefore, the danger is there when one's not fully satisfied. Then some external cause could again bring one off the path of devotion, off the path of transcendental practices. In other words, one is adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika. One is agitated by one's own body and mind. Therefore, or someone may be agitated by some external object of sense gratification being present. So by restraint, by going in a secluded place, there's no other, nothing else is there. The one is simply doing the yoga process. Then the internal, there's no adhibhautik, there's no other living entities around. And adhyatmika is your relief to some extent. But should some other entity or other object appear, then that may cause one to be disturbed. So you can see that the process of yoga is not very practical for our cities in the 20th century. At present, where all the major corporations are spending millions of dollars advertising their products, using provocative advertising methods, as it takes the senses of the viewers in various ways, trying to create the corporate image. Just like you may be advertising cigarettes, which are known to cause cancer, lung disease. Now they also say colon cancer, various other things are more likely by smoking. But they'll advertise a particular brand with the mountain scenes of waterfalls and fresh air. Every year it's actually just taking in some kind of smoke into the lungs, some kind of smog in concentrated ways. But the advertising corporate image they're presenting is spring and the outdoor, the great outdoors, and so this is all the type of illusion that they're creating. And this is bringing a deep home, disturbing their lives in various ways. So if somebody actually gets away from all these things, goes in some secluded place, does yoga, lives in a sattvic way, then gets out of the But when they go back to the city, or when they again associate with those types of things, they may become agitated, they may fall down, and they be attracted to do some of those activities again. So, Narada Muni is stressing the point that we should follow his footsteps, we should engage in glorifying Krishna. And he's also stressing it to Vyasadeva that he may glorify Krishna in his Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the thing which is missing. Vyasadeva has presented jnana, yoga, karma, but he's presented mixed. Devotional service is there in all of the parts of the Vedas, but it's a mixed. Do service to Vishnu to get better cows, to get better financial situation. So this mixed with karma, or jnana to get transcendental knowledge, or to get yoga, mystic power. So it's always mixed. So, once you have nailed it, if you mix carob with it, or you mix some no matter, you make something with it, it's finally different than what it was. It's no longer milk. It's carob milk or turmeric milk. It's not milk without anything is milk. Other things change it a little bit. So Narada Muni is saying we should have devotional service as it is. Devotional service in its pure flavor is the best, better than when you mix it with anything else. He has personally tried it. He's saying that you should also taste devotional service unmixed, see how they like it. You try that devotional service by mixing it with various other things. But at one time you try it unmixed, just pure devotional service. That's the best way to live. Of course, unless one tries each flavor, they won't know which one they like the best. Sometimes they know this is very nice, but Narada Muni is personally endorsing. You try bhakti flavor. Pure bhakti. And that is satisfying to the soul. And Narada Muni has tried the others, he also has seen other people trying, and he's come to this conclusion based on realized knowledge. So, in our own life, what to speak of practicing mystic yoga. Mystic yogi is there susceptible to fall down if they don't engage in devotional service. Even though they're practicing this system of meditation, restraining their senses, living in a secluded place, etc. What to speak of someone who's living always in contact with the senses, who's living in contact with the objects of the senses, who's in the material activities, they won't stand a chance unless they engage fully in emotional service. And even the great yogis who are holding out or living in the secluded places with their, you know, tiger skins or deer skins or their little pulpits and meditating, they are subject to get disturbed. They want to speak of someone who's living in the material world with so many, with the family and money and house, properties, and so many other things. The only hope is if one is fully engaged in the world. If one is fully engaging in devotional service is so sweet, is so nectarian, that its flavor will be more. It will counteract the infection of the senses. But if someone, I am still feeling disturbed, I am still having anxieties, I am still having desires, it means that we are not fully practicing the devotional service to the extent that we should. We should adopt the process. We should first adopt our practice. But our practice is perhaps not up to the mark. We are mixing, different other things with it. We are putting good bhakti some other things. We are not doing everything as a service to Krishna. We have to consciously connect all the things we do as an offering to Krishna. Whatever you offer, whatever you need, whatever you give away. Everything should be done as an offering to Krishna. So, that is actually requires a lot of sincerity. One's way is easier, black and white, just go away from everything in a secluded place and just don't do anything. And one way it's like cut and dry, black and white. But to live within the material world and have to consciously engage everything in Krishna's service, that requires a lot of sincerity. Because nobody is right to ultimately be able to tell to what extent someone is doing that, except for Krishna. And by Krishna's mercy, Guru or a devotee may be able to some extent understand. Even it's very difficult. Rather the Lord, Krishna knows what they're thinking. And Krishna is rewarding, Krishna is blessing the devotee according to their sincere effort. But practically we can see, even someone who's practicing the sadhana, they also have their mind, we can't see what they're doing. But if someone is not even practicing the sadhana, then that's why I'm doing. There are then devotees who are practicing the sadhana, but in their mind, they were keeping other thoughts, other desires. Everything we do, we have to think consciously how we can offer that to Krishna. We think, oh, here's a very nice person. Material consciousness might be, oh, I'd like to become a friend of that person, or have that person be my friend for some material self-sharing. But in Krishna time, we think, oh, there's a nice person, nice to make, to have that person be the body of Krishna. We want to offer everything to Krishna. There's something nice to eat, and there is offered to Krishna. Now, these foods are in season, so there's offered peaches or whatever the fruits might be in season to Krishna. Krishna is so kind, he lets us have the remnants. But we know we consciously try to think how to offer everything to Krishna, everything nice, everything beautiful. Raghava Pandit, he was so merciful, he was so devoted, that he would always try to give the best things for his deities. He had many coconuts. But his coconuts, you know, there was a better tree of coconut a little bit distant, so he got coconuts from that tree. Nowadays, of course, you can get fruits from all over the world, so we offer whatever the nicest thing we can to the deities. Of course, none of this is also offered locally, whatever is in season. Krishna likes to take the seasonal fruit, the nectar of devotion. So, these are examples of different ways we can think how to do everything for Krishna. So today is the 4th of July, the festival which is organized annually here in Talabon. The devotees are using their various abilities to please Krishna. The 4th of July for America means that when the Bill of Rights, for the Declaration of Independence, all these things are connected with the 4th of July. People want liberation. They wanted freedoms. They were seeing the government as restricting them in various ways which were beyond what a government should do. Not allowing them the right to worship, the right to pursuit of their own desires. So these things are enshrined within the brief history of this country, only a couple centuries old. So, recently, the daily culture, the government would not restrict a person in their sincere effort at achieving self-realization. The Brahmanas were beyond the purview of the government, those who were. But everyone had to follow some system of religion. System of religion was handed down to some need, not that anybody could say that, well, my religion is to kill other people, or my religion is to be a butcher, or my religion is to do something harmful to others. Religion had been given by God. Dharma, Sakshat, Bhagavat, Gita. But the freedom to practice religion, that was the basic right given by Krishna, by the Vedas. In America, people have this pride, they have freedom. But actually, we of the Krishna conscious movement are very proud and should all find in the world. Happened to be born here in America. About the Prabhupada came and brought this movement here, and from America he spread it all over the world. Prabhupada many times have referred to his American disciples helping him. So actually, even in India and other places, many times they know our temples as Martin Temple, American Temple, because the devotees came from America and established the Krishna Balaram Temple, the Mayapur Temple. Actually, it's Krishna's temple, but they are the superficial vision. The superficial vision is actually the greater danger even than the government. Government has been controlled by constitutional rights, but to defend yourself, you have to spend millions of dollars in court fees. So it's very difficult to get justice in Kalyuga. Even though the law may be such, the system is so expensive that to get the protection of the law, you have to spend unlimited money. So only very rich organizations can actually defend their own rights. If some individual's religious freedoms are infringed, what hope does he have to take a case up to the Supreme Court? Very difficult. So, even then it's up to the court that they want to hear your case. They don't have to hear it. You may have a good case, but they don't have the time to hear it. They cannot hear only 3% or 2% of all the cases. So, although the rights are there in the Constitution, it's very hard to get the relief. And the bigger obstacle is the people's own prejudice. People have so much prejudice that sometimes they see, oh, this person is different. Why are they wearing a different cloth? So many Indians will be coming here today, I understand. So that's it. Traditionally, in India, they're wearing dhoti and sari. Now the women are still wearing sari, usually was some other Indian type of dress. Not always, but sometimes they're wearing, but the men, you know, in America, I think they're generally shy to wear dhoti. Even now in India, in the big cities, they're shy to wear dhoti. But people don't understand what is this different dress in India and other places. So, due to prejudice, sometimes we face this difficulty to preach. Actually, what the Krishna consciousness movement is doing for America through this cultural exchange is doing something much greater for preserving this ideals that are ingrained in the Constitution and the world life, the First Amendments. Because we're actually broadening that perspective, the viewpoint, the very parochial viewpoint of the American people, where they only see themselves in a very limited frame. We're helping to add the tolerance. By letting many people aware of the great Vedic and Indian culture, by making them aware of pure devotional service. Actually, all religions are meant to please God. That is the ultimate purpose of religion. But now one religion thinks that my way of serving God is the only way, all the other ways are wrong. And this way intolerance is created out of dissension. Paul gives the example of like many children trying to massage the back of the father, they all start fighting and beating the back of the father and he's yelling out, "Stop it, stop it, what are you doing?" So the Vishnakant movement is trying to bring everyone together. Let everyone realize there's only one God. Whether you call it Jehovah, Allah, Krishna, Govinda, Rama, there's only one Supreme Lord. And we are all meant to serve Him. This is the Maharaj's point. And that your service to the Lord is the most satisfying. Is the satisfying, not the most satisfying, it is the satisfying activity. It's no other activity. Material activities are never satisfying. They may be for a moment satisfying, but they're not satisfying. And even the spiritual activities in yoga, which are very peaceful, they don't satisfy us. So ultimately, one comes to the point of pure devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya was specifically preaching pure devotional service. This was his unique contribution. Even in the history of the whole Vedic culture, Narada Muni was one who was preaching pure devotional service. And there are different acharyas who were preaching. The Lord Chaitanya, in modern history, he was one who preached pure devotional service for the masses. So it's very rare to find someone who is preaching simply pure devotion. And Lord Chaitanya was very strict. He wanted his followers to maintain that integrity, that they would also only preach pure devotional service. When some of his followers would even go to listen to other people who are not preaching devotional service, he would ban them. They would become, because they are considered that they were deviant, they were poisonous. He would not let them even listen to him. When Advaita Gosai started to preach to other things in devotional service, Lord Chaitanya started chasing him with a stick. Of course, Advaita Gosai was doing it in joke, just in order to get the Lord to disrespect it, wanted to have the Lord treat him as an inferior. The only time he was respecting the Lord Chaitanya said, never do that again. But for the doctor, so many times Lord Chaitanya said, don't listen to other groups, don't listen to other lectures. But he would go anyway and listen. So one time, Lord Chaitanya, when he heard that he had gone again, Mukundari came back and wanted to see Lord Chaitanya, but he was told, "You can't see him. You're not able to see him. You don't want to see him anymore. You're listening to other philosophies." Because if you listen to other philosophies, how is the devotional service? Those who are initiated, those who are practicing, before you're initiated, you listen to anyone. And you decide which path you want to follow. But if you decide to follow the devotional path, then that means that you simply do everything as an offering to Krishna. So hearing some Mayavadi or non-devotee message is, you know, for some, learning some devotional service, say you go to the cooking class or the food class. But regarding the absolute truth, regarding philosophy, if you go listen to other philosophies, especially in a immature state, then one can get very confused. How is this not offering to Krishna? It's not meant to please Krishna. So then you are not fully depending on Krishna and trying to fully absorb your consciousness or consciousness to Krishna consciousness. So then that person is a deity. And then they start to assimilate these speculations, then their own preaching will be affected as well. So one person has to thoroughly become real life in the Krishna conscious philosophy. There is possible to debate with other philosophers, to establish devotional service and discussion. Not that we go to learn from them, although they have a teacher, because we understand from our philosophy that no other process, neither Gana nor Karma or Yoga, is equal with devotional service. So why do we listen to other sources to gain some knowledge? We know about other processes in order to establish devotional service, but to go to learn something is very dangerous. To learn something for our own personal benefit. Because we won't benefit, it will be hard. It's like sometimes I want to just learn what it's like to smoke or what it's like to do some disharmful. Why should we have to learn how to do sinful activities? We know that they're bad, so we can avoid them. I met many people in India, they said, my whole life, I never touched any meat, never touched any of these things. That's very good. Sometimes you murder someone to find out what it's like to murder me. And then to kill an animal or take someone into an animal you can be in order to know what it's like. In many cases, then you don't know what it's like. Why do we have to know what it's like to do sinful things? You should know what it's like to do the best thing, to do the most service. We can see what the result is that people are doing these things and this is the result they're getting. We can see by our own intelligence that, oh, this is not good, I don't want to do that. There's more intelligence. It's not that someone has to get AIDS to know what AIDS is like. You can see this person has AIDS, he's dying. So, do you want AIDS? No, I don't want AIDS. Not at all. And don't do this thing. So, learning by experience is not as useful unless it's something which is already authorized as learning by the experience of our spiritual leaders. They first tell us what are the things we should learn, what are the things we shouldn't learn, and why reasons are already clearly given. Not that we are just dogmatic or we just accept advices. We understand why. So much is not that we are told, not because dogmatic but because of practical reasons. He told us about how to listen to other philosophers. If you are practicing devotional service. Everyone managed to they decided they heard class and then they decided they want to do devotional service. Once you do devotional service, then you don't listen to other philosophies. But Bhagavad Gita they didn't follow, so then Bhagavad Gita just said, I don't want to see him anymore. I don't want to see his face. You try to go there, you will stop at the door. So then after a short time, he was in so much anxiety. He pleaded with the other devotees, he was fasting, he was crying. And I made a big mistake, I'll never do it again. They would approach Lord Chaitanya and he said, you associate with him, I won't. I don't want to see you with this person. You keep resting me and I'll go. You can associate with him and I'll go somewhere. I know. No one would even bring it up anymore with Lord Chaitanya. And so much time was going by and the doctor was there. gradually fading away with so much anxiety, wandering around like a madman. He was such a, he was the lead kirtan singer for Lord Chaitanya. Every day leading the kirtan, associated, going up. He couldn't go to Srivas, the house for the kirtan, couldn't walk on a Lord Chaitanya. He was completely banished. So from one moment, from the most intimate associate to the completely banished, because he wasn't following Lord Chaitanya's instruction. He just took it very cheaply. So Lord Chaitanya is very merciful, soft like a rose. So when he wants to establish a principle, he can be very hard, like a lion. Didn't compromise his principles. So both things we have to remember. We cannot just take what Chaitanya's mercy for granted, take it cheaply. But no matter what I do, he's going to do his mercy. So, deliver anyone. Once someone takes to the path of devotional service, it's a very great responsibility. And we cannot, in the name of Lord Chaitanya, claim to be the Lord, appreciate the Lord, we claim, and then go on to all actions and expect that Lord Chaitanya is going to protect us. Taking initiation is a very great responsibility. It means that we are officially accepting before Lord Chaitanya that I am now going to follow your process and only your process. Like I mean, the other people, by the people, for this, for your pleasure, by your process, with your devotees, everything is of your system is completely fixed. Lord Chaitanya is supposed to. But if we don't follow, then how then what was the use of our declaration? We won't get the shelter of Lord Chaitanya. So Mukunda Datta, he took it very lightly and he started to do so many things. It doesn't matter, I'm not a senior devotee, I'm not going to be affected. I just want to hear how these people are speaking. Whatever he was thinking, he was going in different places. Lord Chaitanya heard, you didn't want to follow? Alright. Cut. I don't want to see him anymore. He doesn't want to, well, do what I say, so I don't want to see him. Why should I see him? So it's important to know Lord Chaitanya is very merciful, but we have to continue to try to follow his instructions. If we blatantly disregard Lord Chaitanya's instruction, very calmly, we do whatever we want. We cannot expect to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Of course, Mukunda Datta, he realized his mistake, he realized it. I don't know how you could explain how deeply he realized that he was practically dying. Really, he became like almost like a madman without the association of Lord Chaitanya. Not eating, not sleeping, wandering around, crying, lamenting. It's very sorry, sir. He calls one man, the secretary of Lord Chaitanya, and said, well, I'm sorry, I can't ask Lord Chaitanya. He already said, please just ask Lord Chaitanya, when will I be able to see you? I know that I cannot see you now. In the future, when will I see you? So when the secretary went and asked Lord Chaitanya, he said, you go and tell Mukunda Datta, he can see me after one core of birth, 10 million births. So then he went out and told Mukunda Datta with the distance. So Lord Chaitanya said, you can only see him after 10 million births. When Mukunda Datta heard that, he was so hopeless that I'll never see Lord Chaitanya again. He said, I'll never see you again. And when he heard he could see him after 10 million births, he became hopeful that I'll be able to see Lord Chaitanya again. I'll be able to have his personal association again. He started jumping on the down and see him. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, I'll see him again. I'll see Lord Chaitanya again. Hari Bol, Hari Bol. He is chanting in ecstasy. It's very surprising to the devotees, hearing that he couldn't sleep for 10 million births, but he's jumping in ecstasy because he saw a chance to go to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'll never see him again. It's like eternal damnation. He was so frustrated. When he heard that he could see, even after millions of births, he became so happy that at least sometime in the future, I can be with Lord Chaitanya forever again. Lord Chaitanya asked him, what's all that disturbance outside for someone shouting? He explained what happened. From the doctors, dancing in ecstasy. He was so hopeless, he'd never see you again. He's going to see you again after millions of births. Just to hear that, he felt hopeful. So Lord Chaitanya said, all right, bring it. But we shouldn't take it lightly. I mean, actually, how far from the doctor he really was repentant. He was so repentant for the mistakes he made. And all the modern psychologists say you should never feel guilty. Feeling guilty, his wife feel guilty. They give so many psychological reasons not to feel bad. But in emotional service, if we make a mistake, it's a purification if we cry. It's a purification if we feel guilty. It's a purification if we're ashamed. But then we try to purify ourselves. Not that we become ashamed and no longer appear before the devotees. Without humility. When a sannyasi would do something wrong and come before Bhakti Siddhartha, he would have him wash the pots for some months on end. Do something humble before the divine, commit an offense, and they would humbly do their devotional service, and this would help to purify their mind. This purify is good if you feel bad about doing something wrong. You try humbly to do your service without any pretension, without any false ego. I'm a fallen soul. I need help. Not that I had to put on a big show that I made a mistake. I want to reestablish myself properly with this community. The devotees are merciful. They will always help someone who needs help. Especially if they want help. They can't help people if they don't want it. So Govinda Dasa, he was fully effective. And he was so absorbed in Krishna and Chaitanya. After that, he didn't obviously then go to hear any more lectures. So that fear of God was there. Sometimes a little fear is also needed. We need to be also fearful of Maya. The devotional service, everything is included. But the devotees, they are, once we take belief in the process, that means that we are understanding. And now I'm going to follow this process. You're not sure, then don't take initiation. Nobody's forced to take initiation. No one has to say that I already want to follow this process. When you are fully convinced that by this process I will achieve all success, this process will take me back to Krishna. And following the footsteps of Mahajana Janaka Dasa Kunta, the great Mahajana Naramuni is one of the Mahajanas. Vyasa Devi, Nara, Brahma, Shiva, Nara is one of the 12 Mahajanas. He is saying that devotional service, I find all over the universe, simply doing devotional service is the only thing which is fully satisfied. You have nowadays a good stuff. Say this person who is able to hit a ball around the field and do some kind of practically useless activity, but he's able to do it very expertly. People pay millions of dollars to do it. So then if he endorses this soft thing, great. And he gets $1 million for it. And everyone thinks, so he's recommending, bring this soft thing, wear this shoe. Use this cloth. Buy this cart. So then, Okay, all of the great people. He's using this or must be the Vasudeva. So just because companies want their product to be endorsed by these so-called great people, then they'll pay so much money. So the people endorse because they're getting paid for it. Whether they use it or not is questionable. Because you have a truly great person, one of the greatest people in our universe. In all, not only our universe, but in all creation, in all the human spiritual universes, Narayana, intimate servitor of Krishna, liberated soul. So he is giving his endorsement, pure bhakti. You see, only satisfied, fully satisfied process. So we get all these endorsements. How much is he been paid for that endorsement? Is that a paid endorsement? It's his own voluntary. He's doing it himself. Why are they Mahajana? They're not only endorsing, they're doing it. And they're recommending because they are achieving the success from it. They achieve success, they're going on practicing devotional service. So we follow their endorsement. Because they're truly great people. I've seen someone made famous because of some newspaper propaganda and some temporary physical mental ability which after some time will also fail. Someone may be the world champion, but after the time when they hold, they're not able to keep up even in that particular sport or that particular food. So here what Chaitanya's process is endorsed. All these great souls, so we're practicing it. And the practice means that we fully absorb ourselves into it. So today is also a day of play, so many different, I understand, kind of activities will be there for the children. I don't know, it's my first time. But whatever we do, we just try to bring Krishna into consciousness. So everything is there, but because we bring it in connection with Krishna, therefore not only is it physically or mentally enjoyable, but it's satisfying to the soul. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Any questions? When we first joined the Krishna conscious movement, in the Western world, I think, also joined. They weren't born in a Krishna conscious family, so they had to undergo various kinds of material activities, and they suffered, generally speaking, they suffered different types of mental or physical anxieties. In the West, suffering was not a pretty common thing, suffering in various relationships or suffering in different ways. Very few people come, never suffer just out of being so wise that they realize to the sum of all of they come. But there are, of course, those types of people also. But generally, people suffer in different ways, and they may come also because of understanding philosophical reasons. But they take devotional service. So they're rejecting all the other things that they were taking shelter of, and they fully do devotional service. And some of them may have joined the arm, or they may have thought of everything. Or somehow they just become forgetful. And once they're in the family situation, actually family life, as Rabindra Swarupa mentioned, if you have morning and evening class, over the 14th quarter of Prabhupada, this is the same morning and evening class, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deities and offering the food to the deities, worshipping and reading the Srimad Bhagavatam from there, evening class, chanting deities and prasadam. These are the four things. So, and of course, often the fruits of our activities for maintaining this program are helping spreading the Krishna conscious movement. What happens is that this guy, Mukunda Datta, took a bite. intend to take things lightly. Like in the Brahmachari ashram, nobody thinks they have the TV and start watching, you know, TV. When you have your own room, your own house, they take a lot of awesome news. But then, you know, pretty far off, things are going to be. And pretty soon, you find some families, you know, they spend hours and hours watching TV. I don't know if that happens here, but I know I've seen the master recently here. The whole big kid, he gets up early and all kinds of prepare for the body of the destiny and concert of our watching TV. When he was supposed to be out there. So, everybody lives in the same building, you can have like a police unit. But the point is that in the Brahmachari, okay, you have the president, you have the Brahmachari command, temple commander, something, so it's much more controlled. So your Grihastha means it's responsible life. Grihastha life means responsibility. Not only the responsibility for wife and children and finances, but the more individual responsibility for your spiritual life. This is one way you see someone who's already been in the mature world as a Grihastha, and somehow they come to Krishna consciousness and gradually they extract themselves from these various habits. In one sense, it seems they have a certain stability. When you see the brahmacharis, they get married, and then they have to encounter all these new freedoms. They want to get a TV, they want to do this or that, and this is there. There's so many examples. They have the freedom. They're not in the same kind of supervised life as a volunteer. So what happens is that they're responsible for their own activity. Of course, in a community, when people realize that our advancement in Krishna consciousness depends upon how strictly we follow everything, voluntarily, everyone may agree to have some kind of a system of reminding each other or any good association. We establish a minimum standard, just like we establish a minimum standard that nobody in the community should be slaughtering animals or taking intoxication or so on. We may make so many rules. Maybe more rules, whatever the minimum standard you want, but the standard should be devotional service. But ultimately, the Grihastha has responsibility, he has to do it himself. Now, if he wants to voluntarily request other people to help him, remind him, or to establish a standard to maintain a certain purity of association, he can do that. The difference is that Grihastha life means that they have that independence, they have a certain license. But they can misuse that independence. That's why we're here in the material world. In the spiritual world, we're completely independent. We can do whatever we want. If we decide to do something contrary to Krishna, we can do it. But then we'll be shoved off here in the material world. So in our devotional service, the Brahmacharya life, the regulated, living in a dormitory situation or whatever, so it's very control life, so it's very easy to follow everything. Surely when you're married and you have your own rooms, you have your own house, you have, you know, you don't have, you know, big brother eyeballs, you know, like physical monitors in every house, what's going on. Krishna is in our heart, he knows what's going on. Krishna is monitoring every thought. These are big brother, he's our big father, he's our mother, he's our best friend, he's everything. But he's also not going to come in and just control our life. You just do what you want in life. Do you want these things? Do you want this thing? But unless you want Krishna, you won't be happy. So if you have the life, it's very, for this reason, it's dangerous. We can't be Krishna conscious. We should realize, not sentimentally like Mukunda taking it very easily, very lightly. No, it doesn't matter. We have to try to be very strict when people say, oh, it's too difficult, monastic life. They have their own way of Vihasa Vaira is a monastic life. But a Vihasa Krishna and Vihasa life is also not a life of a sense. Yeah, while they are social, they have but they do spiritual activities. Listen, and if we don't do it, we're putting ourselves in a more vulnerable situation. And the more we do non-emotional activities, that says here very clearly in these verses that pure devotional service is undiluted. Why is it diluted? Even with religious rituals for a censure. Censure is watching some kind of, without any, unless you get connected. I have to see, I'm going to do a multimedia show for Krishna, and for this show I need to see the different techniques that people are doing, and I might use it, and you know, you have to be able to dovetail them substantially the reason. I'm just seeing this because I want to enjoy my senses and see it, right? So then, denying the sacred personal service mixed with karma, jnana, or bhakti is not a devotional service mixed with maya. So there's no longer free devotional service. It's dekarma. It's not even karma. Karma means that someone is doing some worship of Shiva or doing some worship of Vishnu and praying that I can give it further Swarga Loka and Heavenly Planet so I can get some kind of material benefit. I give that we want some material benefits in Krishna. That is mixed with karma. Someone is doing devotional service and they want to achieve mystic powers or liberation. So that's mixed with karma, yoga, again. So someone doing devotional service at the same time he's taking poison. The other things are edible. The sense gratification without any religious reason is not even edible. That's dekarma. It's sinful. So how can you mix? You're not only complaining that the athlete is mixing karma, jnana, and yoga. Those are mixable. You can mix those. And you can achieve something beneficial. You can get heavenly planets, you can get mystic powers of salvation. But if you want to feel love and Krishna, you can't take anything. So because we are part of Kali Yuga, what we mix, we don't even mix the, you know, this is the good things. You know, it's like, we mix garbage. It's like you think, well, if you're putting, I give the example turmeric, which is like yellow satic, or you put in like some carrot or some black, so they go, these are all mixable. Some of the flavor produced is still edible. But if you put milk and you add wine, no mix, you can't mix. So the problem is because of our upbringing, because of our habit. If we mix it, we tend to mix lousy things, things which are actually unedible. And then that pollutes our consciousness, and then we start to